It's time for the SwampSwamiSports.com audio podcast.
Somebody call out the search squad because the personalities are missing from men's college basketball today. Quick, can you name me the three best men's college basketball players in the nation this year? That's what I thought, because I wasn't able to name that trio either. The answer is 7'4" center Zach Edey of Purdue. He received 57 of the 62 top votes for the Associated Press Men's Basketball Player of the Year. Tennessee's Dalton Kinect finished a distant second with just 3 votes, and Jamal Shedd of the University of Houston picked up the other 2. And that's it. Just 3 men's basketball players out of the thousands of talented college athletes received a vote for the Player of the Year. Now, last week, Purdue's very tall center, Zach Edey, also became the first man in more than 41 years to win the top individual award in back-to-back years. Another 7'4" giant, Ralph Sampson of the University of Virginia, won the title for 3 straight years, ending in 1983. The University of Iowa's high-scoring Caitlin Clark picked up all but 1 vote to take the Women's Top Player Award from the Associated Press for the 2nd year as well. The Player of the Year voting was based on the player's regular season performance. The past 3 weeks of March Madness we've been watching had no bearing on their selection. The women's college basketball has been catching fire this year, but why? Speaking of Caitlin Clark, the soon-to-be-leaving Iowa Hawkeye scoring machine has helped to grow the television ratings for women's college basketball for the last 2 years. For the first time ever, there has been near parity this season as viewers have begun to gravitate more toward the women's games on television. Last Monday, a week ago, the Elite Eight game featuring the Iowa women's team playing up against the defending champion LSU brought a then-record 12 million viewers to ESPN. Woo! Every game at this level will feature some great players. However, this game had Iowa's Caitlin Clark, the leading scorer in women's college basketball history, playing up against the LSU 6'3" post player Angel Reese and the team's very fiery coach Kim Mulkey. LSU was trying to defend its 2023 national championship title, too. That Iowa versus LSU game last week had loads of talent, passion, personalities, and a terrific storyline. And the result? A new television record audience for women's basketball. But just a few days later, Iowa went on to defeat University of Connecticut on Friday night in a Final Four thriller. That matchup once again featured a good storyline and some very familiar names. Would Caitlin Clark's Iowa team be able to make it into a 2nd straight national championship game? And to do that, the Hawkeyes would have to down perennial contender UConn with their All-American guard Paige Beckers and the team's Hall of Fame coach Gino Auriemma. So the game Friday night featured a couple of the best-known basketball players on the women's side, a familiar coach, and 2 well-known basketball schools playing in a win-or-go-home Final Four environment. And just days after setting the television viewing record that week, the Friday night game shattered the mark set on Monday night as an estimated 14.2 million people watched the Friday second half of a Final Four doubleheader. That number of people, 14 million, is about 3 times what the average women's Final Four television programming was getting just a few years ago. Then yesterday on Sunday afternoon, the women's championship game was played on ABC. The game featured a similar high-interest formula to create a big buzz for basketball fans. There was the Iowa senior guard, Caitlin Clark, playing in her last game, trying to lead her team to a national title. South Carolina came into the game undefeated and trying to win its 3rd title in 8 years. The Gamecocks brought a deep and talented team led by their giant center, 6'7" Camilla Cardoso. Plus, the South Carolina, pardon my pun, sometimes cocky head coach, Dawn Staley, seems to enjoy being, at least in pro wrestling terms, a babyface to some and a heel to others. Though the game was tied at halftime, South Carolina would pull away to win the championship game 87-75 and finished with an incredible 38-0 perfect season. Another game, another viewing record established for women's basketball. That's right, an estimated 18.7 million television fans watched the South Carolina versus Iowa women's basketball game.
Yes!
Meanwhile, the television audience for the men's college basketball keeps shrinking. On the men's side of March Madness, the television ratings have been in a slow decline for several years. Let's reach way back to 1978 and a battle between Larry Bird and Indiana State and Magic Johnson's Michigan State Spartans set an all-time record with more than 35 million television viewers. And then there was that classic 1983 Final Four game, you remember, between the University of Houston and the underdog NC State that pulled in 32 million television fans too. The final time which we could find that 30 million fans or more watched a March Madness men's game was back in 1994 when Coach Nolan Richardson's University of Arkansas team beat the mighty Duke Blue Devils. Beginning in 1995, at least 20 million or more television viewers would generally tune in, and that became the norm for the men's Final Four games. But in the last 2 years, neither the men's Final Four semifinal games or the championship game have been able to attract more than 18 million television viewers. So what's causing that erosion of fan interest in men's college basketball? For the same reason why the women have been seeing increases, the men's tournament has seen a dramatic decrease in the number of multi-year star basketball players playing for the same school and the same coaches. And that can be blamed on several things. Number one, of course, the NBA's one-and-done rule, which allows the most talented players to enter the NBA just 1 year after leaving high school. And you can thank that rule because of some guy named LeBron James, who went directly into the NBA after high school. Number two, the NCAA's transfer portal allows players to immediately transfer from one college to another in the next semester. And number three, the increasing amount of NIL dollars being paid in recent years to players to either start their college career at one university or later transfer to another, and in most cases, for more money. And for some of the men, times have never been better. But for those of us longtime fans of men's college basketball, times have never been worse. Tonight, on Monday night, the 2024 Men's Championship game will feature a battle of 2 7-foot giants playing on a couple of very good teams. Purdue's Zach Edey is 7'4" tall, and he's going to face a big test in UConn's 7'2" colossus by the name of Donovan Clingan. Though both of these fellows are very talented centers, the two big men possess the combined on-court charisma. It's like watching Frankenstein going up against Lurch from the Addams Family. If you watched the 36-3 UConn Huskies during the March Madness tournament, that entire team plays like a well-rehearsed symphonic orchestra, and it also displays very little emotion on the court, too. And though the team has been very successful, they do play a rather boring style of basketball. And much of the same can be said for the 34-4 Purdue Boilermakers. In addition to the lack of star power in Monday night's men's finale, the two head coaches, UConn's Dan Hurley and Matt Painter of Purdue, are both relatively bland personalities. Without Coach K of Duke or some other high-profile coach to root for or against on either team, it makes it harder to get fired up to watch the UConn versus Purdue matchup tonight unless you have a personal interest in one of those two teams. It's a certainty that tonight's championship game between these two number one seeds, which is happening for just the 10th time in modern history, by the way, is going to feature many excellent plays made by some superb college basketball players. And for fans at home, it will be a game filled with "Who dat?" comments, as the majority of the players on both of these teams are relatively unknown to the average college basketball fan. Will the men's title game on Monday night have more television viewers than the 18.7 million who watched the women's championship game Sunday afternoon? We'll find out. But the women's college basketball game is here to stay, at least for now. As we mentioned earlier, the NBA has allowed men to be drafted into the professional ranks at the age of 19 or one full year after their high school graduation. But by contrast, the WNBA will only allow teams to draft women's college basketball players who are graduating seniors or those who are turning 22 years of age during this year. The WNBA, in case you didn't know, is 50% owned by the NBA. And the men's league has quietly subsidized the money-losing WNBA for many, many years. Unlike the NBA, though, the WNBA does not have a developmental league, allowing younger players to play regularly and continue to improve. And since the Women's Professional League is yet to turn a profit, doesn't make any economic sense to fund a development league, at least for now. And that's why women's college basketball players will likely remain better known to those of us home viewers in the postseason going forward. With 4 years for college basketball fans and television viewers to become more acquainted with the top women's players and teams and their coaches, the chances are very high that women's college basketball is going to maintain or grow more in popularity. Just get used to it, guys. I'm Swamp Swami.
Over and over, what more?